Hello and welcome to Florida Basketball Hour. I am Neil Blackman, Saturday Down South. On this episode, Eric Fawcett, GatorCountry.com, myself, going to break down Florida's big SEC semifinal win over Texas A&M. Gators with a huge comeback, biggest comeback that has happened to A&M since 2010, biggest Florida comeback since last year in the Florida State game, but still, obviously, the moment much bigger here, even though FSU is a rival. So we will break down that, talk about Florida's chance to cut down some nets and win a championship tomorrow in the SEC title game against Auburn. Thank you all so much for listening. We appreciate you so very much. Remember to rate us on Spotify, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen. Hit us up with that 5-star rating. We appreciate you and enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to Florida Basketball Hour. I am Neil Blackman, Saturday Down South. On this episode, I will be joined by Eric Fawcett, GatorCountry.com. We're going to break down Florida's win today at the SEC tournament in the semifinals. Gators rally to defeat Texas A&M 95-90. Florida will advance to tomorrow's championship game at 1 p.m. against number 12 Auburn. Tigers ranked 12th in the country, number 4 in KenPom. So Gators playing a top 5 KenPom team, a top 15 overall team. It's a rematch. There was, of course, the famous first game, at least famous in Gator circles, infamous in Auburn circles. Started with Auburn's kind of cocky social media campaign about it. You know, the Auburn effect. The tweets about being in the swamp, and then the Gators came out, built a 28 or 29 point lead, and just sort of blew Auburn out from wire to wire, a 40 minute rout of the Tigers in the first game. Florida led by 29 at one point. Now that game, you know, was the Riley Cougar game, and today was the Denzel Aberdeen game. And because today was the Denzel Aberdeen game, Riley Cougar had 0 points. And didn't play a minute, didn't play a single second. Aberdeen played most of the time. Remember in the first meeting with Auburn, you know, Kugel came off the bench, played 30 minutes, had 22 points, grabbed 4 rebounds, had a block, had a steal. So will he play tomorrow? We will find out. But, man, going to be tough to pry minutes away from Denzel Aberdeen, the hero of the day. And really, it started, Eric, when Florida was down 18 because it was Aberdeen who made a tough basket that got it to 40-26, and then Aberdeen who hit a three that got it to 40-29. And suddenly Florida got it, you know, up to 40-33 on a couple free throws, and it was like, oh, it's from 18 down to 7, just like that. And that was when you kind of felt like, maybe Florida had a chance to win the game.
Yeah, it came in a hurry. It was something that I really think, and we can talk what it is exactly that maybe the staff trusts more about Aberdeen than Kugel, but I think probably starts a little bit with defense. I know that you've been in some different spots on what you think of Kugel as a defender, but I think if there's one thing you know about Aberdeen too, is it's just he's not going to do too much with the ball and turn it over. But for whatever reason, they went to Aberdeen first, and I don't think that his shooting is something that is leaned upon or expected there. But he was definitely up to that challenge as well. And I think that you could say to some extent, it's like, hey, if you defend and knock down shots, there's always going to be a place for you. But I think that it was the way that he it wasn't just that he was making himself invisible and not making mistakes and then making some big shots. I mean, he made some off the dribble. The steals were not something, the ball was thrown to him. He made some plays and I did not think we'd be talking about the Denzel Aberdeen legacy game, but it's hard to imagine anything. The one thing I'll say too is just like moving forward, I think the one thing you could say that Riley Kugel had that Denzel Aberdeen didn't is that with Kugel there was a threat that maybe he has a 20 point game, And that was probably the one thing you said, okay, Denz Aberdeen is going to be more consistent. He's not going to turn the ball over. Maybe a better defender, but Kugel's the guy that, you know, might go off for 20. Well, now Aberdeen has shown he can go off for 20. So you do wonder who, I don't think you wonder at all who's going to get the call first. It's got to be Aberdeen. There's no question about it. The question is just, will Kugel play at all? I think to win in March, you need some guys to step up in ways they don't always have to during the regular season. And of course it was Denzel Aberdeen.
Yeah. What a performance, you know, and I mean, you mentioned defense, like he came in, played the bulk of the second half, and A&M scored, I forget what it was, 50 or 52 in the first half. And then they shoot 33% from the field in the second half. They shoot 25% from deep. Florida's defense was just way, way better in the second half. And it started with keeping guards in front of them. And then I think finished with really, really good defense by Florida's bigs to kind of manage to stay vertical and play physical without committing a ton of fouls in a game where obviously there were a lot of whistles, but Florida did a nice job of not committing so many fouls that Texas A&M just made up the difference at the free throw line, which is sort of what happened in College Station.
Yeah. And I think again, you look at most of these matchups and you think that the Gators have a bit of a front court advantage. And I would say that was the case once again, where not necessarily a game where they were played through quite as much. And I feel like Texas A&M was a little bit more aggressive on the inside. And, but yeah, just another, you know, rock solid game from Tyree Samuel, who knocked down his free throws. I think everyone is happy about that. Five assists for Tyree Samuel. I was thinking I was going to go back and see when the last time he had five assists was. And I'm assuming it's quite a while. Maybe I'm selling him short. If I'll just open KenPom as we speak, but and that's something too about the way that Texas A&M defends is that they really pack the paint. They're going to double down on post players, and they're going to dare teams to shoot. They came in like 350th or something in terms of opponent 3-point attempts. So that's just the roll of the dice that they do. And of course, it didn't work out particularly well against the Gators, who were just bombing from three. But definitely great recognition from Alex Condon and Tyree Samuel, particularly to turn some of these post ups into wide open threes. And that's how, like you said, you just kind of blinked, and Florida was like back in the game when they were down 18. And as I quickly scroll KenPom, this is not super, super scientific, but I'm going to say that was a career high in assists for Tyree Samuel, I believe, with five.
Yeah. Okay, I'm unmuted. Sorry, I was making sure that I didn't have mute on because I was looking at post-game quotes. Mm. And I thought it was interesting that in Denzel Aberdeen was like, you know, because he hasn't really had to do post-game media for, you know, certainly not in anything of this caliber. And so his answers were just so refreshingly like candid and thorough. And he got asked about, you know, finding guys and spraying the ball around and the bigs having assists. And he was like, you know, we rep it with Coach Hovday all the time. Like Coach Hovday said in the huddle before the second half, like, you know, keep your eyes open for skips and ball reversals in the post because they're coming as soon as the ball comes down there. And and that's exactly what Florida did. I mean, they just got so many open shots. So I had to laugh when Buzz Williams, who did not congratulate Florida and thus became the first head coach at the SEC tournament to fail to congratulate the winning team. I'm not salty about it. I'm just reporting the news, much like Buzz loves Boots Radford. But what I will say is that he goes, well, they shot 55% from 3-point range. You know, he's like, I don't think we did anything wrong. And it's like, well, you know, yes and no, Buzz. I mean, there was never any sort of like Florida, but you would have thought by like the second or third ball reversal three from Tyree Samuel that they might have made an adjustment or stopped doubling. And that just never happened.
Yeah, like I get that argument and I don't, just in the sense that like, yes, like our if like if you give a team as many wide open, like they've been giving teams wide open threes, this many wide open threes all season long, are more teams going to shoot, like what did Florida shoot, 53 or 54%? Is that going to happen every single night? 54%. So that's not going to happen all the time. So like you play that exact game over again and you get Florida the exact same shots. Are they going to hit 54%? Probably not. You know, if you were to bet, would that happen again? You'd probably bet they wouldn't. So there is like, yes, you can make a math argument or like a regression argument, but it's also one of those things that's like, you are still allowed to make adjustments. And that's where I think the, how homogenized the NBA game is, to a lot of people's frustration, is that that's essentially how all these NBA teams play. They just launch half of their shots from three and they give up half of their shots from three and whoever's hitting makes it. And because they play an 82 game season, if the other team hits more than you and you say, well, you know, that happens. But it's like, also like, yeah, well, you can make adjustments and change the math in your favor. And it's also one of those things as well, where like, yes, you're playing a math game with a 3-point attempts with both the number you take and what you're giving up, but like you have to understand the possible outcomes here. And if you're going to give up as many open threes as they have all season long, you just have to know that there's a possibility that you are going to give up 54% to a team like Florida, much like there's been games where, you know, they've given up, you know, 27% from three and got huge wins. So, that argument was, you know, like, I think Ole Miss was like 8 for 30 against them in the first round. And, you know, it's like that happens, you know, maybe you're due for regression the other way. So, that was just in this whole world of analytics taking over college basketball. I give that one like a C- in terms of legitimacy, not totally false, but one that requires a little bit more context. But in terms of the not congratulating Florida, you know, what I to be honest, I probably wouldn't have even noticed it if you didn't bring it up. But that was a big one for them. I mean, I don't know where we'd have to look at the bubble results. I got to look when Lewis Harkins refreshes today. I thought it was absolutely wild when Dan Gavitt went on national television and said before the games today, and I don't know if you saw this, Neil, but no. He said that the committee, he was on whatever it was, Dan Gavitt, and he said, like, essentially that the committee had already decided on 35 of the at-large teams before a lot of basketball games were played today. So there was a lot of negative reaction to that, and for good reason, because there was teams like as we're recording this late Saturday night, it finished a little bit earlier, but I just on recording finished watching the Mountain West final. Well, you know, we think that New Mexico was safe, but they ended up winning the automatic bid, but like didn't know there. Florida Atlantic gets upset. There's a lot of people who think they do not have a case to be an at-large team. But then so it's kind of colored a lot of people's opinions the way that like at this real time at 10 p.m. Eastern, where there's a lot of people talking about like, well, I guess this means that for Florida Atlantic is probably safe, because literally Dan Gavitt went on national television saying that 35 of the at-large teams were already decided on. So again, just like, I just couldn't believe he said that from an optics standpoint. And amazing. I don't even remember where we got there, but whatever it is on Texas A&M's fate, this is where I was coming from. Guess whatever it was in Texas A&M's fate, it's probably decided before this game was even played, whether or not they're going to be in the field. But again, I think the Gators have a little bit of that, like playing with found money, that's kind of their situation right now. Anything they kind of get is gravy after this whole SEC tournament, whereas Texas A&M has been absolutely scratching and clawing for tournament spots. So I could see how, you know, he'd be a little bit more on edge than a lot of coaches. But I'll give his analytics type breakdown. Not that he claimed it was analytics, but he's essentially making an analytical argument. I'll give him a C- on that one. And not congratulating Florida. That I don't know. Like, something I probably would do, but I don't. I probably wouldn't notice if you didn't say it.
Totally. You're allowed to be upset that you lost.
I'm just having a little fun with Buzz because
some
of the other stuff that's happened this season has not impressed me very much. And you know, the fact that he's clinging to bubble hope with the preseason SEC favorite and the preseason SEC player of the year could also contribute to him being a little on edge. And they haven't done what I think that he thought they would do this year. Florida got out rebounded a little bit, but it didn't ever feel like it was terribly lopsided to me. I don't know about you, Eric. You know, they did. And then they Florida had some timely offensive rebounds. They only had 9. A&M had 15. But, I mean, they were timely, particularly the one that Condon got when it was a one-point game. And goes back up and scores. Alex Condon, man, just what a special freshman season he's had.
Yeah, and I mean, I think this happened for us like 2 months ago. But there's really no question who's the best center on Florida's roster. And while there Micah Hanlockton starts, it's like, again, he gets the easiest minutes possible. He gets to play with the starters. Then he comes in with usually against softer bench units, then gets the starters again. And whenever it's crunch time, it's Alex Condon. And you're seeing just the minutes go up and up, and it's completely justified. I think that Condon has been excellent. I know I use the term that, you know, above or you know, where someone rates relative to replacement level SEC center, like Condon is better. Condon is giving better than that. There's a lot of teams in the country that would kill to have his production. So I think he's been excellent. I think he gives the Gators a much better chance both on offense and defense. And I don't think that there would be a change at this point. And again, I'm okay with like I do think Micah Hanlockton has to play his 12 minutes a game, and giving him the like kind of spoon feeding, like the easiest minutes possible, play him with the starters. Don't play him in crunch time at all. Like that's probably the way to give him as least consequential minutes as possible. So I actually do like the utilization as much as I'm totally on the side of Condon being the best center on the roster. But I mean, if someone wanted to clamor for a change in the starting lineup, that would be justified because Florida continues to have slow starts. And the reason that, you know, we talked about Denzel Aberdeen having a role in the comeback, it was also when Micah Hanlockton got out of there and suddenly Texas A&M didn't have someone that they could attack on every single possession. And that's also what happened when Alabama got on a hot start and Florida got him out of there, and suddenly there wasn't someone that Alabama could attack on every single possession. So I texted Neil some numbers that he tweeted from the account that the four starters outside of the center position, and it hasn't been updated from this game, but it's going to be even worse because I think Micah Hanlockton was like a zero today on or I forget what his plus minus, whatever it is, it's about to get worse than what it just was. But the starters over the last 10 games with Micah Hanlockton have been a minus 5 net rating. The four starters with Alex Condon has been a plus 39 net rating. Ooh. And at some point, if the Gators are like, you know, we really seem to have a lot of slow starts here until we change the center position. There's just the data is starting to pile up. So I'm curious what you think, Neil, just in terms of like, we know Condon is very, very good. Do you like the current utilization, or are you like, hey, it's kind of not fun getting killed the first 4 minutes of every game. It would be nice to not have that happen. And a very obvious way to do that would be to start Condon.
So this is going to be, you know, we've actually talked quite a bit on the last few shows about bucking traditional convention. And so while I don't have a problem with, I really don't mind if Mike Hanlockton starts the SEC championship tomorrow. You know, and we can get into whether that's been an interesting Twitter discussion. Let me save the secondary thought and just answer your question. The secondary thought about the SEC championship, I'm trying to remember to bring it back up. But like in the NCAA tournament, if Florida's a 6 seed playing an 11, I really might start Alex Condon. And I know that bucks convention to change the lineup you've gone with 22 games in a row. Like if it's not broke, don't fix it. But like, you know, we saw another tweet today from Evan Maya, who again was like, all the analytics say that Florida could be really dangerous as a 6 seed if they win in the first round. But there's certain things about Florida that kind of freak Evan Maya out, mainly how much better they play against good teams than not great teams. The Bart Torvik has a thing the quality opponent efficiency metrics. Florida is one of the only teams in the country whose quality efficiency is better than their actual season efficiency. Like against top 50 teams, Florida on Torvik is better offensively by 2 spots, better defensively by 10 spots. And yeah, they are at a 0.9284 in the, in Torvik's, you know, like algorithm rating, which is much better than their actual rating against everyone else. So like Florida really does play up to the level of their competition. I don't got time for that in the NCAA tournament. I don't have time to sit in a long media timeout down 9 points because Micah Hanlockton gets cooked on a couple inside drives by a 6'8 undersized forward from the Atlantic 10, man.
Yeah, so just some numbers to this. And again, to suggest that this is exclusively Hanlockton's fault would be unfair. But like these are literally situations where like everything stays the same. The quality of competition, the quality of teammates stays the same. And if you put Alex Connan in instead of Hanlockton, things instantly get not a little bit better, but infinitely better. And that's there's just a lot of sample piling up. And just even if you can interpret, actually, I'm just going to say some data and you can or some examples and you can interpret this however you want. But so these are like the first shift of Florida's games over the last, I don't know, we'll do 5 or 6 games. So this is various times. It's usually about to the first timeout or so. But so against Texas A&M, this is just until Florida makes their first sub, which is almost always, well, in recent weeks, Alex Connan coming in for Walter Clayton's or Walter Clayton, Mike Hanlockton. So against Texas A&M in the first 5 minutes and 16 seconds, the Gators were -5. Against Alabama, I had all this pulled up and now it's gone. So against Alabama in the first 4 minutes, the Gators were -6. Against Georgia, the Mighty Bulldogs, the Gators were 2. As my phone rings from a coach, against Vanderbilt, they were 2. They were +2 in 5 minutes. And against Alabama, the first game in a game that the Gators won by a whole bunch, they were +1. So These are all the starts that the Gators have had over. And then let's do one more, South Carolina. I didn't even look this far back, so we'll see what this sample is. And then against South Carolina, in the first 3 minutes, the Gators were -2. Sorry for fumbling through that while trying to field phone calls. But no, as you can see, so that was South Carolina, Alabama, Vanderbilt, Georgia, Alabama again, and Texas A&M. Teams of very different quality and games that had very different outcomes. Yeah. And every single one of them, the Gators had bad starts. The data is pretty overwhelming in one area that, again, you make one sub at the center position, things change pretty quickly. But like this is like the last 6 games the Gators have had bad starts. And I think that is why if they were to say, I think a lot of people would be like, oh, you're going to change your starting lineup in the SEC tournament championship. That's crazy. Maybe, but also if they did it, I would say like, well, when you've spent 3 weeks being really bad in the first couple of minutes, not changing something might be a little bit crazy.
Yeah, no, I mean, I just think it's time. They made changes with guards. I mean, they made Denzel Aberdeen the first guard off the bench today. And it worked. It was something that I called for like 1.5 to 2 hours before the game. I said, you know, let's see if he's protecting the ball. You can't give A&M free points because they do struggle to shoot. Let's see if that works better. It worked. I didn't know he was going to do this. I'm not clairvoyant. But, you know, it's been really good. And then Will Richard, obviously, has had a marvelous SEC tournament. And they have stuck with him. So there's the contrary point, right? Like he had 4 games where only once would you consider him to be good. The other 3, you consider him to be bad, in fact, not even average. And so, you know, they stick with Will, who's been a now pretty much 2-year starter at Florida, and he has certainly delivered at the SEC tournament. And, you know, it's interesting. I mean, but again, getting back to the Aberdeen thing. So like, it wasn't just Kugel that didn't play some today. Like, in order to stick with Richard, they took Walter Clayton out for large stretches of this game because he was struggling to keep people in front of him. And I think they challenged Zion Pullen, who struggled with quicker guards all year. I think they challenged him to be more physical, and he was more physical a defender in the second half, which is how he went from like -4 to +6 on the game. He was +10 in the second half, CP, and looked a lot more like the first team All-SEC point guard. But Walter Clayton, you know, there was actually one moment where I think the camera shot over to Clayton and Golden was like talking to him. It's like, hey, man, it's okay that you're not in the game right now, you know, like, because Walt wants to be out there, but Aberdeen, Richard, and ZP were getting it done. So my point is, like, why not make a front court change too? And, like, honestly, and this, I get, this is awesome because it dovetails back to the SEC championship question and allows us to preview Auburn before we get out of here and you call coaches back. But, like, even though I'd start Handlockton tomorrow, I'm already rethinking it based on, like, this Twitter conversation that's occurring right now in Gator Nation, where, like, fans are like, would you rather win tomorrow or make the second weekend? Like, would you rather hang a banner this year and then kind of house money your way through Thursday and Friday and whatever happens, or not hang your banner and go to the Sweet 16? Like, if you could just answer that tomorrow. And a lot of people are like, I'd rather win a championship.
Interesting. Yeah, that wouldn't be my sentiment personally.
Me neither.
I actually respect it. I wish that people took conference championships more seriously. To be honest with you, my real take is I think that people should take regular season championships more seriously.
Yeah, for sure. especially in basketball.
But yes, yeah, I don't have football takes, to be honest. I never really thought about it. But but I don't know. Like, again, I just think this team is loaded with talent. I probably don't think the SEC is as good as a lot of people think this year. I thought it was going to be a lot better. So I'm not saying this is like, if Florida wins, it's a Mickey Mouse, you know, championship or whatever. A little bit harder to fake a second weekend, especially if you're going to be like a six seed or whatever we think the Gators are going to be.
Sure.
To me, it's, I don't know. Like, I guess I had to think about it for a brief moment. And if someone feels that way, like, hey, I completely understand that. For me, the joy of winning an SEC tournament would fall pretty flat losing in a round of 32 game around, or of course, round of 64. So that's where I'm at. Don't know what you think.
So the best argument I've heard the other way wasn't actually by a Gator fan. Although I appreciate the Gator fans that have been chiming in and hitting me up on Twitter and like making this argument. So Doug Gottlieb, I never thought I would say the best argument I heard was from Doug Gottlieb.
Wow.
The best argument I heard from Doug Gottlieb was Florida's been pretty good for the last 10 years, most of the time, but they haven't yet won a championship or hung a banner since Donovan left. And the perception for that program would be massive and maybe bigger than just going to the second weekend would be. And I thought, that's an interesting theory. Like, it's at least a theory I have to sit and kind of contemplate. But I also think that, like, the people that the championship would matter to beyond fans are like, yeah, like, that's a very quick conversation with a transfer portal candidate. Oh, yeah, we won the SEC tournament last year. Come here and compete for that. Recruits are going to notice the Sweet 16 more, to be quite honest, I think, to the extent that they care about any of that at all, which I think they do a little bit. But anyway, that was the, like, most interesting argument I heard.
Who won the SEC tournament last year?
Alabama.
Okay. I didn't know. I'll be honest with you. I don't know who won the ACC last year. I don't know who won the, well, I do know who won the Big 12. I don't know
the
who won
ACC the Pac-12 last year.
Oh. Yeah. So, you know,
I have no idea. I think Duke.
I certainly could tell you who made the second weekend. So I don't know. That's where it falls.
Good stuff.
And hey, I should have given a little bit of lead time. But if you're listening to this, did you know Alabama before Neil said it? Maybe you know more than me, and again, I'm someone who, like, to be totally honest with you, like, around the country, I think I could probably tell you who won the regular season of teams more or conferences more than the tournament, which I know I'm in the minority of that.
I'm probably like you. I probably could do that, but yeah, I didn't even know New Mexico won their conference tournament until you just told me.
Well, that literally just, you know.
Okay.
That happened while you were wrapping up a Saturday Down South article, I believe, that you sent me, because you sent me it right while it was wrapping up. So I was assuming your work. But yeah, I don't know. The more I think about it, and the more I don't know how far you could go down the line, Neil, of two years ago, who won the SEC tournament. I'm not trying to pop quiz you, because I don't know the answer to that either. So I don't know. I just don't think it quite resonates. And I'd love if it did, like, to see. And again, part of the reason I was so locked into the Mountain West tournament is because the Mountain West tournament has become a massive deal. It's in Vegas, which helps, but they just, like, set their overall attendance record, like, before the semifinals games. And Thomas and Mac, which is, you know, massive, was, like, jam full for the finals, and it's becoming, like, a thing. Much like I think the Big East is it's really cool that, like, the Big East tournament, I still like it still matters to fans. And while I would still, and I still feel like that has a little bit more clout even nationally. Like, when I say Big East tournament, there is intrigue there with a lot of just general college basketball fans, and the SEC tournament just isn't so. I'd also say the ACC tournament and Big 12 tournament aren't as well, because you've also got high profile coaches who have actively spoken about how they are usually worried more about what's happening the next day. So interesting argument though. Like, hey, we just talked about it for quite a while. So I could maybe be even swayed. I don't know how strongly I truly feel about it. My only two cents is that I think that people should care more. Not saying it's like the most important necessarily, but my plea to people is, if you're going to really evaluate teams and evaluate coaches, look at what they do in over the course of the large sample size regular season a little bit more than, and even I've talked about unbalanced schedules. This is tailing into something I talked about the last podcast forever, about unbalanced schedules and how it affects it. It's because I care so much about league finishes, because I think it's like, that is if especially these leagues like the Big 12 that play a true round robin, like, you, a sample of that size where everyone plays everyone home and away, like, that should be how you know who's truly the best. Maybe not a one and done tournament, but it's good to have juice though. Like, we there was like 5 minutes at the start of this Texas A&M game where there were some people on Twitter saying, like, well, pack it up, like, let's rest it up and, like, get back to Gainesville and have a nice watch party for Selection Sunday, because hey, it's been a little while since the Gators have got to have one of those fun watch parties of finding out where they're going to be seated. So there's a couple of people who said that, and then very quickly Alex Conan and Denzel Aberdeen willed their team back into it, and then people aren't saying that anymore. So it is good to have just a level of so I am excited to see that fans are excited for an SEC tournament in a way that, like, has not happened for a very long time. I'm sure Denver Parler was probably tweeting out today, like, whenever it was, because, man, like, not just this staff and not just the, like, it's been a while since, like Florida has been quite snake bit in the SEC tournament for a while.
They have. And first final since 2014 when they won and went to the Final Four. I mean, it was already their first semi since 2019. The Georgia win was only their second win this decade in this tournament. And to do it, they'll play a team that has one quad one win, and I think is the weirdest team in college basketball to figure out. Auburn, they're the only team in America that is in the top 10 in KenPom in offense and defense. They are ranked fourth overall in KenPom. They're still fourth. I thought Iowa State was going to pass them. Just the absolute beatdown that they put on Houston, and they didn't quite catch them. But Auburn is undefeated in quad two, 10-0. And that's kind of helped them, like, pump up their KenPom ratings, because a lot of those games have been pretty lopsided too. But they're 1-7 in quad one, even though they're fifth in KenPom. Look, I really don't think this is a complicated matter. There's nothing new or breaking about this matchup. It wasn't like this morning when I had to talk about Manny Obaseki, because he was playing 10 minutes a game when Florida played them in College Station and had like exploded onto the scene in the last six games to play like 30 minutes and score 20 a bunch. And like, it was like, oh, well, you remember how they had two good guards? Now they have three guards that drive, and Obaseki might be the one that plays in the NBA the longest. And, you know, maybe he won't be, but at least it was like something you could say and talk about. This isn't like Florida's guards are way better than Auburn's. Auburn's front court is probably better than Florida's because Johnny Broome is awesome. And that's kind of it, man.
Yeah, I think that's kind of was my big takeaway when Florida played them earlier.
Right.
We were just kind of wondering, hey, is this actually like a top 10 team? Because believe me, I love my metrics and usually go with it in a lot of ways. But this is some generational computer tricking from Auburn and Alabama, I think. That's kind of the big takeaway with Auburn is I just don't think their guards are at the level at, well, to be honest, I was going to say the level to win an SEC. It looks like they might. At least we have started to see like a little bit more. And the one thing that just kind of struck me about these guards when Florida played them and earlier in the season was that I think that a lot of people knew this was not like the best backcourt that Auburn had, but I thought that there would be a little bit more like boom or bust kind of flammability. And then against like, it was just such like a milk toasty guard performance against Florida that I thought was very strange. But then you see in the SEC tournament, it's like Katie Johnson has like the most outrageous turnover you've ever seen. And the next possession hits like a ridiculous turnaround fading three. And like, that's a little bit more what I expected from them and a little bit more what I expected from Aiden Holloway and Trey Donaldson to an extent. So I do feel like they're playing a little bit more chaotic in a way that I use that as a compliment in this particular setting where I feel like, again, like, and that's something that like they did so well in recent years is just like they like thrived in chaos when the game was just flying up and down and like, yeah, they'd make two mistakes, but the team they're playing makes three. And over the course of a long game, that turns into a blow win for Auburn. And then when Florida played them, I just felt like there was just no juice at all. And again, we do need to talk about the fact that Florida had the massive rest advantage and how much that played a role. We'll never know. But I do think they're looking a little bit more like the ethos of Auburn basketball, where they thrive in chaos a little bit more. I still don't think those guards are great. And like, while I'd have to really look at it, if they were to win the SEC, like this might be the worst backcourt to win the SEC in a very long time. I do really like the front court. Like you said, I think Johnny Broome is outstanding. I think Dylan Cardwell for years has been like the best post player off the bench in the league.
He's good, man. He's good. I'm surprised he doesn't play more. Like I get that Jalen Williams is Bruce's guy, but like I would play Dylan more.
Yeah, I think he's excellent. He's a guy that, again, talk about value above replacement level center, like Cardwell, absolutely.
Yeah. He's been so good in this tournament, by the way.
Yeah, and still you look at his minutes and you're like, what, like 10? Or, you know, like not exactly, but like you still think he should be playing more, but he's impactful when he's out there. So, and then I think you just look at this SEC term performance. They really have gotten a lot more contribution. Like it's not like Johnny Broome has 24. It's like the offense is really spread out and they're getting a lot from different guys. And I think that also is because of the fact that they've it's not leaning so hard and like trying to post up Jalen like Williams a whole bunch or all that. So I would say they are certainly playing much better basketball than when the Gators saw them last.
Yeah, and they do, as you pointed out, Florida doesn't have the bye week. They don't have the home court advantage. They have played three games in 3 days. Auburn has played two games. You know, obviously Auburn has a rest advantage. Auburn played before Florida, so they even get a couple extra hours here. Now A&M just had that, but right now a couple extra hours is a lot. I think it's going to be challenging for the Gators. I also think that their guards are just better. Like, and again, I mean, you look at Auburn all year, and whether you think it's computer trickery or not, like the teams that have given them problems, really with the exception of Miss State, and they avenged that loss today. They had lost to them earlier. They beat them today. But, you know, the teams that have given them problems have been better in the backcourt than them, whether it is Tennessee, whether it is Kentucky, whether it is Florida, whether it is Appalachian State, whether it is Baylor. I think they lost Alabama once too. And certainly Alabama has better guards than Auburn does. So, you know, I mean, that's kind of the formula. We'll see. Maybe Johnny Broom just absolutely annihilates Florida's rotation of bigs. Jalen Williams kind of played his best game since the injury today with 13 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, good passer. And they needed it because Johnny Broom, you know, he struggled a little bit against Tolu after being so good against Josh Gray, which you would expect Johnny Broom to just destroy a guy like Josh Gray. So, you know, yet another reason, like Johnny Broom, Micah Handlocked, and trying to be physical with him is not going to go well, folks. So the faster Florida gets Hauk and Condon into the game, the better, because Auburn is going to pound the ball inside and see if Florida is too tired to guard them, I think.
Yeah, I think that's like, hey, I talked about the starts the Gators had before their first substitution. These last six games, definitely something to watch, see what the score is, see how that first group does. But I wonder if it's going to take to the first TV timeout or if it'll be sooner to see someone get in there. And again, I also wonder what the plan will be from Bruce Pearl. Like, we're just seeing so many teams just, again, relentlessly attack Micah Handlocked. That's why I kind of feel like that would happen again. But at the same time, maybe they have something else in store, but that could also inform just how quickly some other guys get in there. And then, hey, to be honest, like coming off the Denzel Aberdeen legacy game, I'm curious when he gets in the game as well. But yeah, I think that when Florida played Auburn the first time, it was like the front court played to, like, we'll call it a draw. And then, but Florida's backcourt was just so much better. I think Auburn's guards are playing a little bit better. I would be shocked if they were to, like, outplay Florida's backcourt. I'm not, like, maybe they could play to a draw, but it's hard for me to imagine a situation where they really get the best of Florida's backcourt. So that's going to be where the advantage lies for sure.
Yeah, Auburn's played 3 possessions of zone in the SEC tournament so far, all of them against South Carolina. So, we'll see if Bruce decides to trade in the high ball pressure for zone defense against Florida too. I don't think that's something that he will do, but you never know. They're playing for a championship. So once you get to that game, you want to win it. And Florida certainly, I think, will do everything they can to cut down some nets tomorrow. We'll be back for the selection show tomorrow night. We should have some guests. I am working on it. Let Eric sign us off and call back his people.
Go Gators and keep attacking closeouts.